Welcome to the Rock. Listening to A Fifth of Spurs.
Hey there, Pounders, and welcome back to the long, long awaited return of A Fifth of Spurs. Tonight, we've got myself, J.R. Wilco, Spurs fan Steve, Matthew Tynan, and Josh Geyer, a.k.a. Completely Deck, running the booth. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. SFS, how are you, sir?
Glad to be here.
Excellent. Well, I think we need to get started. First of all, just kind of looking back, it's taken us a while to get together on this and get it started, but we got to have some kind of quick review of the season here. Steve, you want to tell us what you think of what's happened so far?
Sure. Real quick, going over the season, obviously Manu gets hurt early in the year. Meanwhile, we're playing the third toughest schedule, I believe, in the league as of tonight, behind New Orleans and Memphis. And we're currently with the second most wins in the Western Conference, even having missed Manu for most of the season. So, you know, strength of schedule's been tougher than any of the other contenders, and we're doing great.
Yeah, yeah, it's easy to say that with a smirk, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
yeah, it's just crazy just how difficult January was and how long the team played without 2 days off in a row. Is just nuts. February is a ton of road games. I've been thinking of it as the attack of the ats, because when you look at the Spurs schedule, it's just one at after another. And that's not just when you talk about the rodeo road trip. I mean, pretty much takes up the entire month. And the fact that they're winning in the way that they are, and as often as they are, is just crazy. To come out of January, which was simply brutal, begin the season at the end of December, and then go through January with three stretches of five games in seven nights. Oh, excuse me, the Figgis innings. And then wind up losing Manu and going, you know, 15-7 while he's out. Yeah, that's just crazy. That's my first big point from quickly reviewing the season. My second is, I love Danny Green.
don't we all?
We can all love him, but I get to say it first. Okay. And it's crazy to watch him play, because it's not just about potential. He's doing things on the court and making backside steals and coming out of nowhere for rebounds and doing amazing Manu type of things. Obviously not with Manu's flair or capacity for scoring, but I just can't get over how he plays and just how composed he is out there all the time. I love it. He's always learning. He's always in breaks, standing next to Duncan, standing next to Tony, standing next to Manu, even when he was in street clothes, just listening and learning the whole time. So,
it speaks a ton about him that he, even when he's not scoring points, he's contributing in all sorts of different fashions, you know?
Yes, yes. And not everybody on our roster does that. You see, right. See Kawhi standing on the three-point line as the place he's supposed to hang out on offense. Rebound goes up, and he's in there for the rebound. Green, same kind of way. Not everybody, RJ, does that. And so just hats off to those guys, definitely.
had to find a place to take a shot at RJ. I think it's an obligation that we have if we're going to be talking about the Spurs. So
no, we have an obligation to take shots at RJ. That's fabulous. That's great. Okay, well, what about you, Matthew? What are your points from the first part of the season here?
Well, I think the Spurs have been so familiar with the old guard, and by that I mean the big three. It's been such a constant over the last decade, really. So you bringing up Danny Green or guys like Tiago Splitter, Kawhi Leonard, Gary Neal, we all saw what he could do last year, but he's still making his way back. But to that point, the bench has been playing amazing this year. We haven't, you know, San Antonio hasn't had this kind of bench at all in recent memory. So the success that this season has seen is the bench is definitely playing a major role in that. But I think that whenever the Spurs started, or I'm sorry, the fifth game of the season in Minnesota, when Ginobili breaks the hand, Spurs fans were looking at that as almost an apocalyptic omen. I mean, it was not a good forecast. You know, people are sitting here talking, well, hey, maybe we can go, maybe the San Antonio Spurs can go 500, maybe
tread
just
water.
Under 500, tread think, water, you heard it.
I think I read tread water in that right? context about 20 times in
exactly.
the course of a week.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that was kind of the everyone's concern, and it's a legitimate concern. I mean, you look at what Ginobili is able to do on the court and arguably the most valuable player. I mean, there's no question about that, but I think and it's pretty obvious, but Tony Parker has been unbelievable this year. Mm. And you talk about it from the standpoint of Manu goes out, people are talking about the team's best player being off, off the squad, and now you're wondering who's going to step up. Tony's playing better than he has in years, and we were talking about it earlier. During that stretch at the end of Life Without Manu, he was playing some of the best basketball we've seen in his career, and I don't think there's much of an argument about that.
No, I think it's great to see him play like that, and as much of a scoring point guard as he is, he's constantly got to walk that balance between being aggressive, as Pop always tells him to, and being a playmaker and setting other guys up. Even to the point where when he went off for those 42 points in the game against Oklahoma City, that Pop, he said that Pop had told him before the game, look, you're going to have to score a ton of points tonight, otherwise we just won't win. And the first thing he did was going out setting guys up, and Pop called a timeout and was chewing him out. He's like, look, I told you to shoot. I want you to shoot. And it's really interesting that in that context, in that pressure cooker, not only was he able to score, to be a volume scorer, but to do so fairly efficiently and to be setting guys up at the same time while that balance has been so hard for him to find going forward. And I just want to put this one point out there because, with Manu out as long as he has, of course, Manu's been out a number of times across the years, but it really seems like Tony's matured to the point where not only can he find that balance, but he could really be a volume scorer in this mm-hmm. league. He's so amazingly durable. He hardly ever gets hurt. And
sure.
and tweaks ankles and little stuff. And
and he gets hit harder than people give him credit for.
And he hits the guys, too. He initiates a ton of that contact. And guys come down on him, and he finishes falling down, and people kind of smirk at that a ton. But a lot of that is he doesn't want to turn his ankles. He just wants to make sure he controls himself, falls at the end of his drive so that he's not, twisting or turning anything coming down at that point. But it's amazing how well he's done taking such a huge portion of the offense and just delivering with that all that on his shoulders.
And you brought up the fact that, he's doing both. He's scoring, he's distributing. I mean, how about the fact that when Ginobili goes down, we're all concerned because typically, Manu's been the best playmaker on the team as far as distributing, setting people up. I mean, we've seen the difference in DeJuan Blair's game without Manu and with Manu. But to that point, Tony was averaging right around the 8 assists, maybe not quite, but 8 assists in Manu's absence. I mean, that's by far the most he's ever done, in his career. Sure, it's not the entirety of the season, but it's still something. 8 assists on top of, mid-20s per game, and by the end of that stretch without Manu in about the last five or six games, he was scoring close to 30 points a game. I think that there were times, and again, like tonight, now with Ginobili, you can see that he gets a couple more plays off, or at least he doesn't have to be the instigator constantly. He is not in charge of pounding it into the paint over and over and over again, as we saw without Manu in the lineup. But with Manu able to shoulder the load, which he did, 7 assists tonight in 25 minutes, Tony can kind of take a different role, kind of settle back into the one he was more accustomed to. But end of the game tonight, you see tired legs from Ginobili, a free throw that was very short. Popovich has even said that he's clearly not back in game shape. So what happens, end of the game, Tony Parker gets into the lane for a layup, and then that sweet floater where he went around two Pistons and went baseline and just dropped it right over the top and in, just like he always does. It's kind of a microcosm of the season. Yeah, a bunch of other people stepping up, and then it's Tony Parker that comes through in the end and wins the game, and he won that game tonight. So
I got to tell you, with watching him play as well as he has, it's obviously the perfect time to trade him.
Sure. Yeah, trade Tony Parker, hashtag.
But with the way that you were talking about how he gets to take plays off and how obviously his minutes are going to be able to come down now that Manu is back.
It's 33 tonight, right about his average.
It's a great time to bring up the rest of the league and the superstars on the teams that are at the top of their divisions and the tops of their leagues and really look at how many and just how hard everybody else is working compared to the Spurs.
This is one thing that the Spurs, especially Popovich, have been so good at over the years, and that's limiting guys' minutes. And now that he has a bench to play with, he's a kid in a candy shop. I mean, in all reality, he can sit here. What, Tim Duncan's playing 27 minutes a game. Parker's playing 33 minutes a game. And that's accounting 22 games without Manu in the season. I mean, that's even though there were games where Tony was really pouring it on and putting a ton of time on the court, he's still managing to average right around 33 minutes a game. And I just think that that's you got to give credit where credit is due. And Popovich has been masterful, really, in going along with this lineup and choosing the right looks on the court when they're necessary. So I think you got to give that credit to Popovich. And we'll see what happens at the end of the year. But there's a ton of injuries going on in the NBA right now. And you look at the Spurs, and they're recovering from a few kind of freakish injuries. I'm not going to attribute a broken hand to, a lockout shortened season or not getting the chance to be in shape. A lot of the injuries you see in that regard are, muscle-related or structure-related injuries with guys that aren't really accustomed to or fully in game shape. At least that's a theory. But the Spurs are getting healthy. Everyone's playing limited minutes.
And they're contributing in limited minutes, which isn't always easy to do. And as many minutes as, Oklahoma City, best conference in the West, they're playing a ton of minutes, those guys. LA's trying to keep pace, right? They're 16 and 12 right now. What are they? Like two games behind the Clippers. Kobe is playing an amazing, amazing schedule. Everyone's playing an amazing schedule, but an amazing number of minutes. He's up in the high 30s, I think. LeBron's close to 40. Wade and Bosch are right behind that. So, it's awesome that the Spurs are playing, are winning as often as they have without Manu, and that they are not going, just leaning an incredible amount on just running guys ragged, and not that Pop would, but you would think with a team like this that has one of the big three out that they would have to lean on somebody else in order to make it work. And so definitely hats off to Pop again for generating offense out of role players, a couple of stars, and doing so in a way that honestly. It looks like smoke and mirrors out there, but it's genuinely smart offense. Everybody knows their spot. Everybody knows where they're supposed to go. And everybody continues to keep on looking for open shots, even deep into the shot clock, refusing to shoot unless it's a really good shot. And that just hats off again to Pop and the staff and the way they run their system. So
yeah, and that just shows the discipline and the continuity of this system right now. And and I wanted to ask Steven, and he brought up the strength of schedule earlier. This is a team that, as we're talking about, is playing limited minutes, yet one of the toughest schedules in the NBA. I mean, what do you make of that, Steven? That's even without one of, you know, arguably the best player on the team in Manu, even without him and this difficult of a schedule, the Spurs 15-7 without Manu on the floor this year. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, absolutely. From a statistical standpoint, I'm looking right now at the minutes per game leaders. The Spurs do not have anybody on that list in the top 40. Kobe Bryant is averaging 38.4 minutes a game. Pau Gasol is averaging 37.1. Andrew Bynum is in the mid-30s as well. So the Lakers, and they are an old team, make no mistake, are running their guys ragged. And Kobe's already playing through wrist injuries. I don't see any way in which he finishes the season without missing some time.
So if you're gonna see Kobe missing some time, you're expecting that, or at least, you know, the way he's seems to be wearing down, more often injured, even more minutes. LA has issues because they've got no bench at all, and it's even a worse situation without Chauncey Billups. You definitely have Oklahoma City, but you've got Dallas playing kind of uneven. What do you think? Are the Spurs? Do we need to start thinking about the Spurs as favorites to make it into the finals?
At the beginning of the season, you didn't want to get your hopes up. I think that the Grizzlies really provided a reality check for a lot of Spurs fans last year. And so I think people went in with a little bit of pessimism, maybe more than the Spurs fan is accustomed to. I like to say, though, or feel that they were just a little more cautious, to say the least, because no one really knew what we were getting. You know, even trading a fan favorite like George Hill, no one knew who Kawhi Leonard was, really. I mean, no one really knows who guys are coming out of San Diego State. But it might be time to start talking about that. Look, I mean, I know it's a weird season. Oklahoma City came in here really tired. But even going back to last year, when the Spurs were clearly not as good of a team as they are this year, they really played Oklahoma City well. If I'm not mistaken, they went 3-1, if not better than that, against them during the regular season last year. Look, Kevin Durant's a tough matchup for anybody. But the Spurs have something this year that's different than last year, and that's Kawhi Leonard. Guys like Danny Green, long, athletic perimeter guys that can chase the young athletes like Durant, like Harden off the bench, that can chase those guys around and make it tough on them to score. And as good as Oklahoma City is, if you take one or two, if you're lucky, of those top three in Oklahoma City, Durant, Westbrook, and Harden, they're going to struggle to score. And we saw that during their last visit down here to San Antonio. Outside of the big three, they do not have a ton of offensive threats.
It's a huge difference between the Spurs and just about everybody else, is that it's not that we just play a ton of guys. We've got a lot of guys who log good minutes, like not just 9 guys, 10, 11 guys, and some guys just don't see floor time due to needing some rest, or Pop just sits them, you're stretching everything out in this compressed season. But just about everybody has that capacity to score and go off and really contribute on the offensive end. And you know, with Pop, they're not going to be on the floor if they're not contributing on the defensive end. So it's really impressive the way this team is built.
I've literally never done this before, so
it's just
so very exciting.
As opposed to Stephen Bagwell literally falling out of his chair, which didn't actually happen, it's nice to know that someone on staff knows what literally actually means. So.
Ooh.
I've got no response.
You really don't.
Literally, I have no response.
Oh, man.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Yeah, Steven, can we call the Spurs conference favorites at this point?
I think you have to. I think if you look at the way Oklahoma City plays, like you said, they've got three offensive threats. They're missing their best backup bench player as far as distributors go, and Eric Maynor, and he's done for the year. No chance of him coming back. And I think Tony Parker has proved that he's going to dominate Westbrook pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. Westbrook's got an ego. That's, a big topic in the mainstream media, or at least it is when the Thunder struggle. Westbrook does have an ego, and Parker can get in his head. And when you get in his head, he makes bad decisions. He gets selfish, and he ices the other guys out a little bit.
And look, we were talking about earlier that their big men can't really score, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Collison is their best interior scorer, and I've mentioned it maybe once or twice, I think, when the Spurs play the Thunder. Since I live in Oklahoma City, sometimes I go to those games, and in warmups, Collison can stretch the floor out to the 3-point line, yawned, and hit them consistently. But they don't use him a lot on offense at all in pick and pop situations. And that just seems like a system flaw to me. If Pop had a guy like Collison, he would be averaging almost 10 points a game consistently, because he's so versatile. He can roll, he can pop, he sets great screens, he crashes the offensive glass really well, but he's stuck on the bench behind Kendrick Perkins, who is incredibly overrated, Serge Ibaka, which is kind of understandable, but Collison's their best big. By far.
Well, and we're talking about the other favorites in the league, I think the loss of Chauncey Billups is just huge for the Clippers. I mean, not only were they already short on shooters, they lose a leader on a team that's full of youth and a lot of energy, a lot of athleticism, but they're young and lack a lot of experience. So, still having said that, though, there's a lot of talk about J.R. Smith on the market, and say what you will about him, the guy can fill it up. 2 weeks ago in China, he scored 60 points, hitting 14 threes. So we all know that he hasn't lost his conscience or lack thereof, getting the ball up. So it's just going to add another dimension to him at that point if he does end up in L.A., where there is a void just waiting there for him to fill.
That's what she said.
But it kind of brings me to the question – is there a possibility the Spurs have any kind of transaction down the road? Obviously very limited as far as money goes for free agencies to go after guys like J.R. Smith, although he would never be a Spur. He was almost one at one point, but I think we can safely say he's not going to be a Spur this year. Is there a chance that the Spurs either A, use their mini mid-level exception on somebody, which is roughly $2.5 million, if I'm right around there, $2.5 million, $3 million, or is there a chance the Spurs make a trade this year? What do you think, JRW?
I don't see a trade. I really don't. And anybody out there who's upset at the way Blair doesn't seem to hustle enough, or it really wants to see Bonner off the team, I'm sorry to disappoint you. Actually, no, I'm not sorry to disappoint you. The way that the team is playing and the way it's put together, the way everyone contributes, and just how far everyone has to go in order to be in the system in the right place at the right time on both offense and defense. I mean, you can think maybe somebody will come in and pull a Drew Gooden at the end of the season and get, average.
I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, pulling a Drew Gooden. I don't think that term is ever associated with
that.
Good
was a, that was a that championship mentioned. Season, and Drew Gooden actually contributed in the fourth quarter of a close win. So he actually owned part of an actual win in the playoff run that the Spurs took in 2007. So no. I mean, generally, pulling a Drew Gooden would be, like shaving your entire head except for like a tiny little rat tail at the base of your neck.
Right.
But
always wanted to do that.
But if
always, right.
I'm waiting to see the pictures. But in this context, pulling a Drew Gooden would be, you know, someone random that you would never expect the Spurs to jump in there and get, pulling them in right before the playoffs start and acclimating them, throwing them in there. That's about as much as I see this roster changing between now and the end of the season. Anybody want to disagree with that?
No, I'm with you. You talked about how, you know, defensive and offensive continuity, and when you introduce a new player, they're going to have to acclimate. They're going to have to, you know, get a hold of the system. And we know from past experiences when guys come in, and really anywhere in basketball, the first place that you have to acclimate, the first place that you need to get in and become familiar with is the defensive side of the ball. Usually that's Popovich has made it clear in the past that that's where he starts. That's where his bread and butter is. That's where, when the Spurs have been at their best, they have been a great defensive team. I think it's time that we start talking about that in respect to why the Spurs are playing so well. We've seen a bunch of offensive contributions from guys off the bench, but really the defense. Over the last 10 games, 88.7 points per game allowed. And this is coming from a team that at the beginning of the season, Popovich called perhaps the worst defensive team he'd ever coached. Now, that's probably a little Pop hyperbole in trying to maybe light a fire, but hey, if it was, it worked.
Popperbole? I like it.
Hyperbole.
Well, I mean, I gotta ask if I gotta ask Steve if we're not gonna see a trade this year, can a team that's playing Bonner 20 minutes a game, which is what he's averaging right now, can a team playing Matt Bonner 20 minutes a game make it to the conference finals?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Well, and I know that's the answer you wanted to hear, Dale.
I want to hear what he thinks.
It depends on how he's being used. In the past, when he's got major minutes, he was having to be more than a role player, and he wasn't ready to do that. Now, even though he's getting major minutes, he's still just a role player.
You're saying that the ball's in his hands left less often than it was last year in the same number of minutes?
Right.
Okay. All right.
Especially now that he's got his shot back. I know he missed two clutch free throws tonight, and that just is fueling everybody's. Bonner is the anti-clutch and the anti-Robert Horry. But I don't think that's the case. Yeah, he's not the guy you want taking the shot with 1 second left on the clock, but he is capable. He is one of the best shooters in the NBA, if not the best shooter in the NBA. Especially when somebody else is creating for him. I want to go back for a minute and talk a little bit about the trade free agent signing scenario. Mm-hmm. The only guy that's left out there right now that I could see us maybe making a move for is Rasheed Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
There were the rumors a few weeks ago that he was thinking about coming out of retirement. We obviously would not need him until the end of the season for the playoffs. Given how well we're playing right now, we would not need him for more than spot minutes. By almost all reports, he is one of the smartest players to ever play the game.
Sure.
Enough to leave the inbounds guy in game 5 of the 2005 finals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, well, come on, anytime anybody talks about how smart Rasheed Wallace is, and hey, look, I'm not going to tell you he had all the tools. He had an amazing court sense, and he was a good defender when properly motivated. They don't win that championship in 2004 without him. But yeah, I mean, when your coach gets in the face of every single one of the players and says nobody leave anyone on the 3-point line, and nobody leave the inbounds guy. And then he does exactly that. Okay,
this is a lot of talk about Rasheed Wallace, but like, come on, like, do we think that he's gonna that's a legitimate option? I mean, I see what you're kind of getting at, that there really aren't that many legitimate options. And Rasheed Wallace's tool set, I mean, the skill set that he has is, well, at least had. We have yet to see what he still has, but. I see what you, I mean. I see what you're getting at. I would, if Rasheed Wallace was up for it and was still on top of his game to some degree, then maybe it could be of some value. But come on, Rasheed.
Well, I mean, if you're going to try to use a situational player like that at the end of the season, why not Oberto?
Oh man. There have been certain reports this year that have talked about Oberto considering a return to the NBA. So I was actually at the time, and this was a little bit before I really was able to see what Splitter was all about, which he can play. But I was almost welcoming the return of Oberto, of the slowest player in the universe, but perhaps the smartest and best at finding the open holes.
How in the world could anyone so incredibly slow find himself open so frequently? It's crazy. I agree. It's crazy. So I guess the last thing that we can wrap up with here, I know we've gone a while, but a lot of talk last year, a lot of talk leading into this year, whether or not it was going to happen. Was the franchise going to lose Duncan in to the lockout and never see him again? Yeah. He's come out a couple of times and shut down reporters on this road trip, trying to ask him, you know, is it last year contract? You know, you're about ready. Does anybody think? I mean, let's just put it at this point. I'm not think. What percentage of chance? Where are your confidence level right now about Duncan coming back and playing next year? I'm close to 75-80% at this point.
Matthew, you want to go first?
Oh, go ahead, Steven. Go ahead, Steven.
I'm 100% he's back next year.
Wow.
No doubt in my mind. I think he stays at least until the end of Manu's contract. Basically, I think he stays as long as Manu stays. He's clearly shown that he can play still at the highest level, even in limited minutes. He's the most efficient player in the NBA.
Limits.
Yes, exactly. And he said, I'm going to keep playing until I can't play at this level anymore. And I don't think anybody has come close to consistently proving that they're better than him.
Yeah, I love all the little lexicon interjections throughout this podcast. If you're familiar with the PTR lexicon, you should just go back and listen to this again and see how many you can catch from JRW.
I don't think we've said point guard yet. I was biting my tongue when you were in the middle of one of your rants on Tony. But Matthew, where are you at with your confidence level?
I don't think there's any way he retires unless the Spurs win a championship. I can see it then. Mm-hmm. But man, there was talk in the offseason about how he's lost weight, something like 15 pounds. You can tell.
Yeah.
The dude is lighter on his feet. He looks more athletic, quicker. The word explosive has never, ever, ever been used to describe Tim Duncan, so I'm not going to say more explosive, but quicker. Well,
you can't say more explosive, but you can say for the first time in his life, there's actually definition in his triceps, which has never been the case before.
Well, he's clearly in perhaps the best shape of his life. And we've seen different matchups this year, whether it's been Tim Duncan against Steve Nash or what have you. We've seen matchups of these veteran guys that have played just fantastic basketball. And so it's been brought up to Popovich in a lot of post and pregame pressers, you know, talking about the condition that these guys are in. And he tells us and he talks about how Tim is just doing everything right. Look, this guy doesn't look like someone who's planning on retiring next year. He's both on and off the court, he does not look like he's close to. I mean, I can see him being able to play for at least another 2 or 3 years. You'll never know what Father Time will bring, but at this point, where we are right now and the way he's playing, the way he looks, I don't think you can make an argument for retiring unless they win a championship and he pulls a D-Rob and rides off into the sunset with a ring.
Yeah, it would be a gorgeous way to see him leave, but I mean the way that he's extended his range and his field goal percentage out to the 16, 19, 20-foot area, it's crazy the tools that he gives the offense to be able to not just score points, but score points efficiently and consistently when he's not close into the basket. So,
We're clearly seeing that he is one of the smartest players and most efficient players in this league because he's been able to transform his game in certain areas that you would expect from a guy who's getting up there in terms of basketball age. He doesn't have the ability to beat everyone one-on-one off the dribble or with his back to the basket anymore. He's had to mold his game a little bit, and he's turned into more of a jump shooter. And, man, he is knocking him down when he's open anywhere from 9 to 23 feet, anywhere in there. He has shown that he's money. I mean, he's hitting well over 50% on those type of shots. So it's he's definitely making a case for putting off retirement just for a little while.
Cool. All right. Well, Steve, I think Matthew and I have kind of dominated here. You have any last thoughts you want to take us out of here?
I think we've covered pretty much everything. I'll save my Thiago Splitter praise, or I'm sorry, Thiago Splitter praise.
Well done.
For next time. Hopefully that won't be as long as it was since last time.
That's great. Well, now that we've got everybody on the same page, and hopefully we'll be able to do something like this again next week. So until then, Pounders, thanks for listening, and we will see you guys at the Rock.
This has been the Pick the Spurs and is produced by Josh Cutter and CommonTheRock.com.